This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, now offering Ethiopian Supernatural, a certified organic coffee processed by age-old natural methods. For a limited time at Pete's retail stores or on the web at PEETS.com.
Affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo Delanderos Tiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new information on one of the Portland police who killed James Chassie Jr. and Republican Senator Gordon Smith speaks on issues impacting the mentally ill. President Bush officially approves a law requiring 700 miles of fencing along the U.S. southern border. And the crisis in Oaxaca, Mexico continues now with all radio stations gone from the airwaves except one pro-government station.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,810 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers. IraqBodyCount.org reports a minimum of 49,692 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. But a new report by The Lancet places the civilian death count at more than 650,000. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 26, 2006. I'm Mike Monkbold.
Good evening. I'm Marlise Franklin. The Sisters School District must repay $1.2 million that auditors say it spent on a homeschool program at a Christian school. The $1.2 million represents about a third of the state aid that the Deschutes County District would get in 2006 through 2007. Superintendent Ted Thonstad said the district could not comment on the situation. A state audit found last month that the Sisters District employed 15 homeschool tutors, with 12 who were also teachers at Sunrise Christian School.
The latest federal dangerous schools list makes Oregon classrooms appear to be a war zone compared to those in California and Florida. Oregon educators declared 16 of their schools unsafe this week, while the heavily populated California and Florida reported none. Moreover, those states have yet to anoint one of their schools as unsafe since the federal No Child Left Behind Act was enacted in 2002. Oregon officials blame the federal law, which allows states to define school violence and provides little oversight to ensure accurate reporting. The label is why some states want to see the law changed or done away with altogether when No Child Left Behind comes up for reauthorization next year. Under the law, schools deemed persistently dangerous must provide transportation for students to transfer to a safer and high-performing school.
The Willamette Week yesterday reported that Officer Christopher Humphreys, one of the Portland police who beat James Chassie Jr. to death on September 17th, has one of the worst records for use of force in the entire police department. The paper's reporters examined a computer database of police use of force reports covering the past 2.5 years. The database showed Humphreys ranked number 2 in the Bureau for, quote, overall use of force. Humphreys is suspected of using what is called a bear hug move that may have caved in Chassie's chest. Witnesses reported that three police kicked Chassie repeatedly throughout the incident. Chassie died en route to a hospital after a jailhouse nurse refused to allow him to be booked into jail because of his injuries. Willamette Week did not reveal the name of the number one ranking cop in reported use of force incidents. Mike?
Thanks, Marlise. In Washington State, a police practices consultant recommends changes in the way that Spokane Police Department investigates crimes and allegations of police misconduct. Mayor Dennis Heshen and Police Chief Ann Kirkpatrick released the report today. The report says the Spokane Department should make changes in its internal affairs process and expand the role of a police oversight panel called the Citizen Review Commission. The mayor hired police consultant Mike Worley in August to look into events surrounding two high-profile police conduct cases, a firehouse sex scandal, and the March death in police custody of a mentally disabled man. Worley recommends more experts and prosecutors be made available during off hours. The consultant also recommended expanding the role of the city's police oversight commission, something Hessian says is already in the works.
Three people were injured when a man attempted to set people and furniture on fire in a crowded Salem church last night. The man arrived at the church in a taxi cab and threatened the cab driver with a knife. He then entered the church through a front door and began throwing a burning liquid, possibly gasoline, onto pews, people, and carpeting. Church members tackled the man and were able to get him out of the church. Other churchgoers were able to put out the flames using fire extinguishers. The fires were out before crews from Marion County Fire District 1 arrived. Three people, including the cab driver, were injured. One woman was taken to Salem Hospital. The Marion County District Attorney's Office identified the man as Salem resident Kam Shing Chan, also known as Daniel Chan. Chan, 53, was arrested and charged with attempted aggravated murder, attempted assault, arson, and reckless burning.
The Mental Health Action Group of Portland's First Unitarian Church hosted a talk late last night with Republican Senator Gordon Smith. He spoke on the challenges facing the mentally ill, his reasons for voting down the new Medicaid bill, and the need for better mental health care in Oregon. Reporters Stephanie Potter and Jessica Rink-Perry bring us this audio snapshot.
I'm a great believer in student health centers. People are too often, tragically, the first line of defense and the only recourse to physical or mental health. And so, thank you. I would tell you that one of the reasons I fought so hard against the Medicare proposal in this last Congress is because I've come to realize that when medical dollars get short, the first things that are cut are mental health programs. That's obviously, from the question, true even in a school health clinic. As a compliment to Oregon, our legislature and our governor, they at least in this last legislative session passed the mental health insurance parity. It's a great credit to them. Most of the medical professionals I talk to admit to me that in their medical schools, they got one class, and yet their practices are composed of about 50% psychiatric counseling, but they're not equipped to know what they're dealing with. We need research parity, and we also need parity in our statutes. Today, if you're on Medicaid or Medicare, and you need coverage, you need help with a mental health issue, your copay is at least half more what it would be if you went in for a physical ailment. And your doctor's reimbursement rate is about half what it would be if you went in for a physical ailment. Why is that? Why isn't there statutory parity in our public policy? It is because we, the people, have for too long said, well, it's not the equal of physical health. And it is. And as this counselor's question makes clear, it's not there's no mental health parity even in a school clinic. And ultimately, you and I, even though democracy moves slow and the ship of state turns slowly, if we insist on the change will be made. And that's up to you and up to me.
Tired of all that election year literature cluttering up your desk, kitchen table, and recycling bins? You may stop at least some of it. Vote early. Once ballots go out, political groups comb the list of those who have voted and strike those names from their contact lists. Parties have been doing this since Oregon adopted vote by mail, with its balloting period extended more than 2 weeks. This year, though, the process is much faster because information from the state's 36 counties have been compiled in a single database. For parties and the partisans involved in ballot measures, it makes sense not to spend money sending literature to people who have already voted.
Joe Keating, Richard Morley, and Mary Sterrett converged at Western Oregon University to tell voters more about the candidates for governor who are not spending millions of dollars. Last night, the minor party candidates displayed the kinship they share after being largely ignored by the media and denied a chance to debate Governor Kulongoski and Republican challenger Ron Saxton. Morley, the libertarian, explained his party's philosophy of limited government, typically described as socially liberal and fiscally conservative. Sterrett, an anti-abortion activist and the Constitution Party nominee, says she believes in a narrowly defined role for government. Joe Keating, the Pacific Green candidate, is a former investment banker turned environmental activist working against liquefied natural gas.
The current time is 5:11. You are listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. We ask for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. Lisa?
Hi, I am here. I'm joined by my super cool friends, Michael Gene Horowitz, an investigative reporter for the KBOO Evening News Department, and Isaac Kaplan Wolner, one of our great reporters and anchors. And I'm just going to roll it away to y'all.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Great to be here for the very end of this membership drive, 503-232-8818. They say we're really, really close to reaching this goal. So let's get folks to call in right now. We're seeing the lights dim a little bit. Maybe that's because our power bill is not paid. Call in and help us pay that power bill. 503-232-8818. Michael, you were telling me you've been involved with KBOO for a really long time. Is that right?
Well, I remember when Bill Reinhart used to run shows till 3 or 4 in the morning. I think KBOO was 10 watts. This was early 70s.
Are you nuts? Is that William Reinhart, the conservative columnist for the Oregonian?
No, this is Bill Reinhart, one of the founders, engineer founders of KBOO, who now does, who now is in the movie industry in Hollywood and does sound engineering.
So you've really seen us grow a lot in that time, huh?
It's just been incredible. I mean, I remember the days of splice tape and everything, and to walk in, you know, I got really involved in the evening news here after Peace Corps. And to come back in the noughts here and see all this digital equipment that our listeners have made possible so that we can compete with national news sources and sometimes scoop them. As you know, Isaac, we've done that.
That's right, and that digital equipment makes it really much easier for volunteers like myself to come in and learn how to do the news. So call 503-232-8818 or outside of Portland 877-500-KBOO. Get those phones a ringing and help us get the best equipment all the time.
You know, we are so close to making our goal and to having another fantastic year of investigative reporting here at KBOO.
I have to jump in here because Michael's done a number of stories where he's even traveled all over the world. And, he actually went to Tonga. He interviewed for KBOO the new Prime Minister of Tonga. And if you don't think that's incredibly, unbelievably special, then you need to be tuning into the evening news a lot more often. And again, the number to call, you guys, we're going to keep these first breaks short to give people more opportunity to join our tribe later. But go ahead and give the number again.
That would be 503-232-8818. Or outside of Portland, 877-500-KBOO.
We're on a little bit of a tight timeline here with the news because we just wanted to keep bringing just a whole bunch of really important stories, including a story about Starbucks, who, as you may have noticed, is our underwriter for this show. And I need you to listen carefully to the Starbucks story that's coming up in a few minutes because, I mean, it just shows that we're not beholden to corporate interest. The underwriting for this program right now is endorsing Starbucks coffee from Ethiopia. And now you're going to find out that Starbucks is in hot water in Ethiopia. So I need you to listen to that. Can you guys give the number one more time and maybe talk about that $125 deal?
Okay, the number.
Sorry, $120.
Yeah, the numbers are 503-232-8818. If you're outside of Portland, you can call us toll free and help us reach our goal here because we are so close. 1-877-500-KABOO.
And I have a really great thank you gift to offer here. We have three books on elections. What Happened in Ohio? Brave New Ballot, The Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting, and How to Steal an Election. You can have this stack of amazing political books for a $120 donation. We have only three of those left, so call up 503-232-8818. We have tickets to the Boo Bash for only $60. Check it out. Give us a call.
Isaac and Michael, thank you very much. We're going to come back to you in a few minutes. And now we're ready to go back to the news with Michael and Marlise.
New statistics from the Center for Housing Policy show that nationally, for every dollar a working family spends on housing, they spend 77 cents in transportation. But in Oregon's major suburbs, it's even more expensive. Portland City Commissioner Sam Adams says the city may have a solution. KABOO's Jessica Perry has the story.
It turns out suburbanites may have to take out a second mortgage just to get to work, according to new research from the Center for Housing Policy. In Oregon, low and moderate income families who move further from work to afford housing are spending more than a house payment on transportation each month, an average of 31% of their income. Portland City Council voted yesterday to set aside funds to help develop affordable housing in the city. Commissioner Sam Adams says it's a critical piece of vibrant cities and healthy communities.
Funding for affordable housing makes it possible for more families to live and work in the city. It's important to keep Portland a city with a strong middle class.
I'm Jessica Rink Perry, KABOO News.
A Cheney, Washington man who uses marijuana to relieve the symptoms of multiple sclerosis has been charged a second time with illegally growing the drug. Spokane County Sheriff's deputies found 79 marijuana plants in July at the home of 57-year-old Samuel Dean Diana. He relies on a wheelchair and showed deputies a note from his doctor that he used marijuana for his MS. 7 years ago, he pleaded guilty to a drug charge and was sentenced to 6 months of house arrest.
The Seattle Biodiesel Company has obtained all the permits to build a $40 million biodiesel plant at the port of Grays Harbor in Hoquiam. The last permit came from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Preliminary site work has been underway at the 12-acre site for several weeks, and a groundbreaking ceremony is scheduled for tomorrow.
Another Washington-based company is also in the news today. Aid agency Oxfam claims coffee chain Starbucks has stood in the way of a bid by Ethiopia to trademark varieties of coffee beans in the U.S. Starbucks denies it asked the United States National Coffee Association to block Ethiopia's request. Oxfam says the trademark could earn Ethiopia up to $88 million U.S. dollars a year. The U.S. National Coffee Association rebuffed the claim, saying the trademark move would reduce demand for Ethiopia's coffee.
Massachusetts Senators Edward Kennedy and John Kerry are tapping their sizable campaign kitties to donate $1 million to elect a Democratic Congress. They're donating $500,000 apiece, half to the Democrats' Senatorial Campaign Committee and half to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Democrats have faced pressure from party leaders and liberal groups to draw down their campaign accounts to improve their party's chances of regaining control of Congress. Kerry has been accused of hoarding money in preparation for another White House run in 2008. Kennedy's up for re-election this fall against a little-known challenger. He will still have a $6.8 million in the bank after his donations.
The city of Chicago is investigating a security glitch in its elections website that hackers could have used to swipe social security numbers and the personal information of about 1.3 million voters. It wasn't immediately clear if anyone actually stole or misused any of the information, Chicago Board of Elections spokesman Tom Leach said. He said the program had been fixed and a forensic computer expert would be brought in to examine the site's logs for any signs of illegal access. A watchdog group, the Illinois Ballot Integrity Project, exposed the vulnerability and alerted officials last week, Leach said. The group said a hacker could have tampered with voter registration data, such as inactivating certain voters' registration or changing their polling places on the online database.
The House Ethics Committee began investigating this week what House Speaker Dennis Hastert and other Republican leaders knew about Mark Foley's conduct with teenage male pages. Two of Hastert's top lieutenants have said they talked with him about Foley months ago, conversations the speaker says he can't recall. Now, 2 weeks before the November 7th midterm elections, the speaker is a potential liability for many of rank-and-file Republicans fighting to win re-election in a campaign environment favoring Democrats. Hastert returned to the Capitol on Tuesday to testify before the Ethics Committee, and, a spokesman said, he will step up his campaigning in the election homestretch. Questions have been raised about whether Hastert's office responded swiftly enough when it learned of Foley's behavior and what Hastert himself knew.
A federal judge in Miami has thrown out a Florida law that prohibits exit polling within 100 feet of a voting place. U.S. District Judge Paul C. Huck says he found was no evidence that such surveys were disruptive or threatened access to voting. He ruled the law unconstitutional, saying it violates the First Amendment's free speech and freedom of the press protections. The ruling resulted from a lawsuit brought by the Associated Press and five major TV networks that want to conduct exit polls. Meanwhile, the same media coalition has filed a lawsuit in Ohio against new state guidelines on conducting exit polls. The organizations say the latest rules are vague, confusing, and should be rejected.
Former New Jersey Governor James McGreevy wants to get married to his same-sex partner, if the New Jersey legislature allows it. McGreevy stepped down in 2004 after acknowledging he is gay. His comments about marriage plans were published in the New York Times following yesterday's decision by the New Jersey Supreme Court that same-sex couples may be granted the same rights as married people. The court left it up to the state legislature to determine if that should include marriage. McGreevy says he and his partner would welcome the ability to bless the relationship in a committed way. As governor, McGreevy opposed same-sex marriage, but says he did so to hide his homosexuality.
20 years ago, University of Maryland basketball star Len Bias died of a drug overdose just hours after he was drafted onto an NBA team. A few weeks later, Congress passed legislation imposing harsh sentences on crack cocaine. Tomorrow marks the 20th anniversary of the law, and the American Civil Liberties issue a report today outlining the unfair impact the legislation has had on African American communities. Jean-May Shia has this story.
When Congress was drafting law in 1986 to crack down on drug abuse, Eric Sterling was counsel to the House Judiciary Committee. Sterling says immediately after Lance Byatt's death, then-Speaker of the House, Boston Democrat Tip O'Neill, saw tremendous political benefit in passing a tough law on drug abuse, and he mustered swift actions.
There were no hearings on the legislation. There was no bill introduced before the markup began. There was no consultation with the federal judiciary, with the Sentencing Commission, with the DEA, with the Justice Department.
The act demands minimum sentences on cocaine offenses, and because Congress argued that crack cocaine was more dangerous than powder cocaine, lawmakers established much tougher penalties for crack cocaine cases. For example, distribution of 5 grams of crack carries the same sentence as distribution of 500 grams of powder cocaine. Jessalyn McCurdy, legislative counsel of ACLU, says these sentencing disparities are imbued with race and class discrimination.
Where you can get a crack rock for $5 to $20, it often takes $50 to $100 for a person to get a gram of powder cocaine. And so that's kind of how there is this perception that crack is a black drug, because it appealed to urban inner cities back in the 80s and even to this day. But that also applies to low-income people across the board as well.
According to data compiled by the Interfaith Drug Policy Initiative, African Americans make up 15% of the nation's drug users, but they consist of 37% of those arrested for drug violations, nearly two-thirds of those convicted, and more than 70% of those are sentenced to prison for drug offense. The U.S. Sentencing Commission reported several times over the years to Congress that crack cocaine is not medically different from powder cocaine. However, Congress has consistently rejected the Commission's recommendation to eliminate sentencing differences between crack offenses and powder cocaine cases. The Department of Justice under both President Clinton and President Bush has also resisted any change to the law. For Free Speech Radio News, Ye Meixie in Washington, D.C.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has formally complained in a letter to President Bush that there is no coherent federal policy to stop global warming. This after Schwarzenegger recently signed a sweeping law to cut greenhouse gas emissions in his state. The Republican governor wrote that California's request for a federal waiver to set vehicle emissions standards has been, quote, ignored with no explanations, end quote, despite an earlier letter from the governor to Bush, the Los Angeles Times reported yesterday. California's efforts on global warming have been in the spotlight since Schwarzenegger and the state's Democrats reached an accord in August on legislation to cut greenhouse gases. The measure imposes a first-in-the-nation emissions cap on utilities, refineries, and manufacturing plants in a bid to curb the gases that scientists blame for warming the Earth.
This past summer, KBOO reporter Michael Horowitz reported on how insurance companies in Mississippi and Louisiana refused to pay out for flood damage relating to Hurricane Katrina. KBOO reporter Jenna Thompson has this update.
David Rideout braced for a grueling court battle when he sued Allstate Insurance Company for denying his claim after Hurricane Katrina destroyed his home. To his surprise, all it took was 2 hours behind closed doors for both sides to work out their differences without a trial. He says the agreement should enable him to pay for rebuilding his home. Rideout was one of the first participants in an experimental mediation program designed to ease the crushing load of lawsuits spawned by last year's epic storm, which damaged or destroyed more than 250,000 homes in Louisiana and Mississippi. With hundreds of Katrina lawsuits clogging his docket, U.S. District Judge L.T. Center Jr. has ordered several dozen plaintiffs and their insurers to sit down with a mediator and try to resolve their differences or face appropriate sanctions. Settlements were reached in 7 of the first 17 cases to go to mediation, including write-outs. Encouraged by those results, Center last week ordered mediation for 57 more cases. Many homeowners have agreed to mediation through a program sponsored by Mississippi's insurance commissioner. As of mid-October, 82% of over 3,000 voluntary mediation cases have resulted in settlements, according to the commissioner's office. Insurance companies appear to support the process. I'm Jenna Thompson, KBOO News.
The current time is 5:28. Tonight we're asking for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. It's time now to go to Pledge Central, where Lisa Loving is waiting to hear from you. Lisa?
I'm here with my cool friends, Michael Gene Horowitz, that you were just hearing us kind of brag about him on the air a minute ago, and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. So we are passing the hat for KBOO. That's all we're doing. And the number to call?
503-232-8818. Outside of Portland, give us a try at 877-500-5266, or even log on to the web at www.kboo.fm. We're so close to putting this one in the bag, getting everything we need. So why don't you not wait a minute longer and give us a call at 503-232-8818.
You know, Isaac, we just had a listener call in who remembers Bill Reinhart doing that great experimental show cryptic propensity projections. That's a tongue twister. But, you know, it really shows how that we go back 35-odd years with experimental radio, cutting-edge news, investigative news. Lisa mentioned Tonga. We were in, Kapu was in Tonga just as a monarchy, which had been in power for 900 years, collapsed in a peaceful revolution. They introduced democracy. I just happened to be right there. And, you know,
he just happened to speak Tongan.
But there wasn't that much interest from public radio or Air America. It's KABU, because KABU had already been ministering to the Tongan community here. We have a Tongan hour, you know, in the South Pacific. We're always sensitive to these various ethnic groups in our city. So naturally, the news director, realizing that this was the great moment for democracy to come to Tonga after 900 years, went with the story in the top of the hour.
So if you want to support news that you can't hear anywhere else on the dial or between the pages, give us a call at 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. Michael and I were talking about all of the skills that we've learned here. This place, KABU, the station down here at Southeast 8th and Ankeny, is a real site of community empowerment where you can come in and learn these skills. We just need your help to keep replacing equipment and to be able to train more and more members to go out into the community or go out far, far flung into the world. So give us a call. What's the number, Michael?
Well, it's 503-232-8818. We're so close to wrapping this whole project and getting to our goal. And out of town, 877-500-5266.
Hey, I want to jump in and talk a little bit about that three-book special for $120. The books are What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman, Brave New Ballot, the Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting, and How to Steal an Election. I got to say, that book, Brave New Ballot, it's written by Aviel Rubin. Check this out. This guy was a professor at a computer science department, like in the Midwest, and after the Ohio recount, which gave George Bush the presidency, effectively, they did an analysis of the computers that were used to vote on, and they found a million ways to corrupt them. That's a whistleblower book. It was written by Aviel Rubin and his students. That's ground zero. That's ground level. That's what we want to put in your hands, because remember, Tuesday, November 7th, is election night, and right here, we're going to have live election night coverage, and I'm talking about a live band. A house band for KABU's live election night. Okay, that's just me talking, but I think that's what we're going to do. But we need your support. We need to know that you care, actually. If you want to know the truth, we need to know that you give a darn. And to do that, call us, 503-232-8818, or toll free 1-877-500-KABU.
You can get all three of those books that Lisa was just talking about for a minimum pledge of only $120, or start up an electronic funds transfer of $10 per month. If you can't do that, set up an EFT of $5 per month, which is $60 for the year total, and get yourself a pair of tickets to the Boo Bash. That's the resurrection of the Boo Ball. It's back from the dead, ready to rock you out on Halloween night at the Holocene. It's going to be a lot of fun. Local bands and DJs, $60 minimum pledge for a pair of tickets to the Boo Bash, 503-232-8818. Give us a call.
You know, Isaac, the food's been coming in here all day for the volunteers. Marcy Bakery, Hoda's, this fabulous Lebanese restaurant. Where else do you see this across the country, where even the shopkeepers and the restaurants are all pitching in because they know how important KABU is on the front lines of the fight against this Bush tyranny that we've been enduring?
And the number to call, 503-232-8818, or toll free 1-877-500-KABU. I just saw through the super secret spy camera that someone came in person. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th. That's a half block south of Burnside in Portland, Oregon. We're on 20 Southeast 8th. Actually, we have to go back to the news, but can you guys give the phone numbers just in case anybody forgot?
That would be 503-232-8818.
And yeah, and out of town, toll free 1-877-500-KABU. That's 1-877-500-5266.
Excellent. And now we're going to bring down the potentiometer for the Palace of Pledge, the membership mothership, and we're going to go back to the news with Mike Monkfold and Marlies Franklin. It's back to you guys.
The current time is 5:34, and now daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
In repressive regimes, it's common for the authorities to run closed governments. And it's also common for them to crack down hard on people who dare to try shining a little light on the government's actions. Take China. On May 28th, it was reported that authorities there were prosecuting a newspaper researcher for revealing in a published report that a certain Chinese official was about to resign as chief of the military. The researcher's crime? Divulging state secrets. Thank goodness we don't live in such a repressive state, right? Yet, on this same day, it was also reported that the Bushites were trying to prevent two civil liberties groups from challenging the legality of Bush's ongoing program of spying on millions of Americans. In an extraordinary move, the government asked two federal judges to block these watchdog groups from exercising their constitutional right to go to court. Why? The Bushites claim that merely defending the legality of their sweeping spy program could divulge state secrets. Then, the next day, it was reported that Bush's lapdog of an attorney general, Alberto See No Evil Gonzalez, was warning journalists that they could be prosecuted just for reporting on big stories like Bush's secret spy program. Gonzalez menacingly declared, "There are some statutes on the book which, if you read the language carefully, would seem to indicate that prosecution is a possibility." What would be the charge against reporters? Divulging state secrets. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, let's review. The Bushites secretly run an illegal and unconstitutional spy program against their own people. Then, when it's uncovered by reporters and challenged in court, the Bush-Cheney regime goes after the reporters and challengers, trying to hide its own autocratic act behind the curtain of, quote, state secrets. How different are they from China's repressive regime?
This Jim Hightower Common Sense Commentary is brought to you by the Marijuana Policy Project Foundation. To learn more, visit www.joinmpp.org or call toll-free 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Stay tuned for Proverbial Perspectives at 6 p.m. following this newscast. At 7, it's Good Times with Reggae Bob. It's sunny but cold in the Willamette Valley and Columbia Gorge this week, with highs in the high 50s and low 60s. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
Oil industry giant ExxonMobil Corporation said today its third quarter earnings rose to nearly $10.5 billion. This is the second largest quarterly profit ever recorded by a publicly traded U.S. company. The report comes as high crude prices this year have fueled record profits in the oil industry, triggering an outcry from consumers. If the trend continues, Exxon is on track for the highest annual profit ever by a U.S. company, beating its own record from 2005. The company also saw stronger earnings from its refining operations and gas stations. Profits at its chemical segment more than doubled.
President Bush signed into law today the, quote, Secure Fence Act, end quote, to build 700 miles worth of fence alongside the southern U.S. border. But as Leanne Caldwell reports, a Republican election year tactic to appeal to their base could cause a backlash against the GOP.
President Bush held a televised signing ceremony of the Secure Fence Act. He publicly praised the bill less than 2 weeks before the elections in an effort to rev up conservative base who supports the notion of tough border security. In attendance were congressional Republican leaders, House Majority Leader John Boehner and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who are looking for any edge they can in the last days before Election Day. But the president complicated the GOP mantra when he said a secure border is only one part of immigration reform.
We must reduce pressure on our border by creating a temporary worker plan. Willing workers ought to be matched with willing employers to do jobs Americans are not doing on a temporary basis.
This legislation authorizes 700 miles worth of fence and increases border agents and technology along the U.S.-Mexico border. The bill, though, has no money behind it, and it's one of the few outcomes to come from nearly a year of hearings and debate in Congress on immigration reform. But border security became an important aspect of the GOP's security agenda in the last month of the Congress. They pushed the legislation so they could go home and campaign and energize their base. House Leader Boehner wrote a letter yesterday to all GOP candidates advising them to campaign on GOP successes, which includes border security. Jack Martin is Special Projects Director for the Federation of American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. They support tough border security to stop immigration.
It seems clear that the Republican leadership has the impression that it will be helpful to them in the election to be able to point to something that the Congress has done towards gaining greater control over our borders.
Being tough on immigration could backfire on the Republicans, who have relied on conservative-leaning Latino voters in the past. A poll released earlier in the month by the Latino Coalition, a more conservative group, shows a major shift in Latino attitudes. Robert De Posada is their president.
The Republican Party has lost almost everything they gained during the efforts of President Bush to reach out to Hispanics.
Their poll of 1,000 Latinos shows that 50% of registered voters side with Democrats, compared to 19% who support Republicans. The issue most important to them is immigration. And Eliseo Medina, vice president of the Service Employees Union, agrees.
What we've seen now is that there's a huge erosion of support for President Bush and the Republican Party in general on this question.
Eliseo and organizers around the country have been pushing Latinos to register to vote. He's optimistic that they will turn up at the polls.
But immigration reform is very personal because it was a personal attack against our families, against co-workers and friends and relatives, and I think that this is a very visceral reaction that people are having to the Republican Party.
Alvaro Huerta is with the Coalition for Humane Rights in Los Angeles. He agrees.
But I think people will start seeing that, you know, nobody's paying attention unless we actually get out there and show that we have some voice.
But Robert De Posada with the Latino Coalition says this poll shows 36% of registered voters are undecided, which he thinks will result in low Latino voter turnout. And the reason for that, he says, is apathy with the Democratic Party.
I think it is basically that they're just fed up. They're listening to the Republicans and their rhetoric, and they're listening to the Democrats basically, you know, talk to them about how important immigration is to them, yet when they put out their agenda of what they're going to do if they take over Congress, the word immigration was never mentioned.
Polls and perceptions only reveal so much. Only after the elections will it become obvious if Latinos are energetic or apathetic. And only then will we be able to tell if the Republican base went to the polls on the insistence of their core issues. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Federal security officials and computer experts have been sent to Los Alamos National Laboratory in the wake of a possible security breach. The FBI was called in last week after police in northern New Mexico stumbled onto what appeared to be classified information from the lab during an arrest at a mobile home. The mobile home's owner was listed as a former employee of one of the lab's subcontractors. Los Alamos has a history of high-profile problems that have highlighted sloppy inventory control and security failures at the nuclear weapons lab. In 2000, nuclear scientist Wen-Ho Lee pleaded guilty to one count of mishandling computer files. In 2004, the lab was temporarily shut down after two computer disks were reported missing. It turned out they never existed, and it was an inventory error. Mike?
Thanks, Marlise. This news from Oaxaca, Mexico. As of this morning, every radio station on the FM and AM dial has gone off the air, with one exception. Using the name Radio Cuidadana, or Citizen Radio, 99.1 FM, this is the only station broadcasting in Oaxaca City at the moment. It first appeared on the dial last night. The programming is a mix of traditional music, talk, and pro-government propaganda. The hosts have been calling for a crackdown on striking teachers and members of the state's popular assembly movement. This comes just after protesters called for an all-day strike planned for Friday. The popular assembly movement has called on its members to leave on their overnight to leave up their overnight barricades until Saturday morning. Meanwhile, 21 Oaxacan hunger strikers in Mexico City have threatened to stop taking liquors, if the political crisis is not resolved peacefully.
The government of Iran and Lebanon's Hezbollah militia are facing charges for the bombing of a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. Marie Trigona reports.
The chief Argentine prosecutor investigating the 1994 bombing of the Buenos Aires Jewish Center has accused former Iranian authorities of orchestrating the worst terror attack in Argentina's history. The bombing killed 85 people, injured hundreds of others, and completely destroyed the Jewish-Argentine Mutual Association building. Prosecutors say that high-level figures in Iran's former government planned the attack, which the Hezbollah militia carried out. They are calling for the arrest of former Iranian President Hashemi Rafsanjani and seven others. Hezbollah and Iran both deny involvement in the bombing. No one has ever been convicted for playing a role in the community center bombing, and lack of progress on the case has led to rumors, a police negligence, and even a high-level cover-up. Buenos Aires is home to the largest Jewish community in Latin America. A federal judge overseeing the investigation will have to determine whether to issue international arrest warrants for the former Iranian officials and Hezbollah figures. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
The current time is 5:46. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River.